Yes, please.
If you just go up to somebody in shul and ask for ask for forgiveness in something of a super, someone's probably not going to go, well, no, I don't actually forgive you. Someone in the middle of shul going to say that? I mean, it seems like it doesn't really affect much of any sort of actual forgiveness.
Well, somebody might say that to you, in which case, that's why you say it. So people should know, you open yourself up, and if they've got a grievance against you, they'll come up to you. Perhaps they can't discuss it in the open, they'd say, look, I'll have to speak to you. They'd say, speak to them afterwards. You know? Get forgiveness. I mean, there's a case brought to the Gemara about Rav who was a butcher who said very nasty things about him because he demanded, made a decision in the bedroom against his butcher, perhaps suspecting he was not kosher or something. So he hadn't come to ask him for forgiveness. And I thought, well, you know, he's not a person I know who's wronged me severely, and perhaps even hints him he should ask for forgiveness, to get forgiveness by Shammai. He was quite ready to forgive him, but he never came, and he continued to say nasty things about him. Wanted before Yom Kippur, he wanted to find out maybe he changed his mind. And he'll give up all the evil things he said against me. He said, I'm quite rich, but by no Hashem in heaven is obviously a big sin for him. So he went past his shop to find out how he would, maybe come up to him. You create an atmosphere where you show you want to forgive others. You want others to forgive you. So instead of asking for forgiveness, he got angry when he saw him. And he used the chopper, and the chopper was just chopping up meat. He saw him coming past. So the chopper came and it injured himself, to which he died in. Because it was very, he was very, of course he was even more upset, because he really wanted to ask for forgiveness. So, and you know, the case you've mentioned, I mean, I've had in yeshiva also, someone came up to me, because when you create an atmosphere like that, someone comes up to me, so came up to me and he said, I spoke a lot of Rosh Hashanah about this. Yeah. So I told him, look, I forgive you entirely, it's quite nice, you've done it, if you will stop doing it, you do go on with it, then of course, certainly I forgive you. You should learn the laws of Rosh Hashanah, it's not to be bad about me or bad about others. Unless you've got, if you've got any grievance against me, tell me what the grievance is. Perhaps I can put it right. So, in order to create an atmosphere of that nature, that people ask one another for forgiveness, in case they may have done something, obviously the other person is upset. So now I'd like to go on with this very deep essay here of Dessler, concerning the basis, really, of questions and doubts that all of us have in different areas of life. He says, I'll start again from this whole concept here. There are many people who've got, let's call it, doubts of a logical nature in different areas of life. They don't know which is the truth in various aspects, and there are different ways of deciding what is the truth. And it's not so easy to make a decision, because the doubt is a very strong one. This applies, obviously, in the intellectual sphere, this applies all the time. There are many different interpretations of the phenomena of the universe, which appear to have many different doubts. And frequently, it's not easy to make a decision which is the right truth. It also applies in Torah. Some, all of this, often sfeikot, what is the halakha, the different angles. And the attempt to resolve those doubts is important. That's what's called lidrash, to search. First is a search in all areas of doubt. Is there a creator, is there not a creator? How old is the world? These are theoretical questions. People have doubts. This sort in interpreting different parts of the Torah, and also halachic aspects, which is the right halacha, which we follow. And the essence of Torah is to come to a conclusion, especially when it comes to practice. Got to go one way or the other way. So this is it, but these doubts are in the mind. Then there is a doubt which has to do with the area of freedom of choice, which can't be decided by the intelligence alone, but it's decided by the emotional inclinations of the human being. And often the person thinks from a halachic angle, from a moral angle, I should, let's say, spend a few hours on helping others, doing things for other people. On the other hand, I feel inside, thereby I'm neglecting myself. Perhaps I miss meals, and I'll be hungry. Maybe I lose money, give it to others, so I won't have enough for myself. And all these areas, it's not so simple for a person just to follow what is objectively the right moral, the right halachic approach, because he's got his own personality to deal with, his own emotions, and his own bias. Which, as a result, even comes in sometimes in questions of truth or falsehood. So the emotions come in. So let's say we have this analysis of this paradox, conflict that takes place. We have in the laws of evidence, which most of the yeshiva is studying at the moment, that a person can't be a witness about his own self. If there's a question whether a person is guilty or innocent in a certain crime, and he goes to the bed and says, I'm a man of truth, and now I'm going to tell you what's the truth about what I did. Which is not as is described by the witnesses. So surely a person knows best what went on with himself. I'm known to be a man of truth, and I'll tell you the truth. But whatever he says, his own self comes into it as well. Therefore, often, it's not the truth. generally speaking. Even it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron Rosas don't accept what they say about themselves. Because the person is blind sometimes to his own emotions. And then the emotions influence the record of what he did. It doesn't mean to say that other people who see it, they see the whole, they also don't see the whole truth. Only Hashem knows the whole truth. But at least people are strangers and they see this person doing something, this question, which act did you do? So they can be accepted as witnesses if they've got no connection with the person who's suspected. But the person is suspected about himself. Similarly also a relative of that person, the wife and the children, also no good for witnesses. Because we're all biased. So, the feelings of the person, conscious and also the subconscious desires, come into creating untruth, and often decisions are based on that untruth. So he describes here, because of the second paragraph we have to know, Lingla Dart, that any doubt that comes into the question of freedom of choice, that means it's got to do with moral decisions or lack of decisions about a person's own behavior, is not really a doubt. But this is the actual bechira, that's the area of freedom of choice. And if a person chooses to follow his own inclination rather than that which is clearly outlined in the halacha and also in the directives given concerning midos, then he creates a situation of suffering in order to make it easier for him to go after his own inclinations. The person can't say to Hashem, look, it's a doubt. It was a question of doubt, and I can't help being in doubt, but it's got to know. I've got to take responsibility if I went in the wrong direction. And I went after my inclinations instead of going after Hashem. This is the phrase which is used in next week's parsha. There might be a person amongst you who doesn't keep to the covenant, but it says, Ki bishvirut lipi elev. I'm going to follow the arbitrary decision of my own heart, my own feelings, instead of going after the explicit covenant with Hashem. So that a person is taking responsibilities. You might say, how does this apply to all mankind? So it applies to them either from the moral principles they've been taught through what we can call it the Ten Commandments, or the basic principles of behavior which he's been taught by this environment, but he decides to ignore it. Or it can also happen through the conscience. The inside, his conscience, he knows quite well that the actions which he's doing are just based on his own selfishness and his own desire to follow his drive for power of himself, to pursue power over others, or to pursue his materialistic and mystic instincts. It says there, a person who can't, of his own accord, distinguish what is happening with his doubts, so he can't choose correctly. Because he will generally think that every action which lies in front of me may be good, may be bad. And in practice, what will he do? He just follows his shutli boy, follows his nature, the whims and fancies that come up in his mind. The only way he can clarify his pattern in life is if he can work out in his mind, is this clearly a doubt, let's say in Halakha, or a doubt in what applies to more theoretical questions, or is it a doubt that has come about because of my feelings, because my materialistic and self-centered feelings have created the doubt. To make it easier, to follow the instincts. How can you tell the difference? Said there's a possibility. If a person will recognize that his doubts about what he's doing, whether it's right or wrong, change according to his moods. So, if it's a question of an intelligent doubt, when a person has considered all the aspects of the two paths, then it won't change according to his moods. Because the pure objective understanding, if he clings to it, so it will become strong, then he knows if there's a change in my feelings come from the negative aspect of my character. And therefore, if I find that I keep on changing according to the change of circumstances, there are times when I consider such a path to be a prohibition, so as a result of which I'm very particular, and there are other times when I'm lenient. Let's give the example which you hinted at. Let's say Lashon Hara, of offending other people. And person, let's say, who's learned the laws of Lashon Hara thoroughly, and then begins to think, well, who did I speak to today, and what did I speak about? So you'll see that frequently, when he allows a bit of anger against somebody to take over, so he's away from that path. So that's the way he can work on himself, to learn. I have to work hard to go over the principles of Lashon Hara more thoroughly and keep myself away from areas where I'm likely to get angry at what people say, which will then bring me also to say words which are really forbidden and do harm. So it's important for a person to work hard on himself in order not to allow the power of doubt to bring about a lack of self-control in the way he treats other people. So to understand it more deeply, we've spoken about the sorts of connection with addictions. The Moral says, at the time when the evil inclination of the person takes over, then the good inclination is forgotten. Like I gave you the example, quite an extreme one, of a doctor who, according to his clear knowledge, knows that every cigarette he smokes takes another, say, 6 minutes from his life. It's already getting on, and he's seen it in front of his patients. And nevertheless, when the craving comes upon him, he becomes blind to that fact. And then the craving takes over and brings him nearer to his end. But that applies to all of us. With anger, it's the same thing. First of all, it's angry. That's what Chazal says, like the person who serves idols. He's serving the idol of himself. He says, look, here am I, a respected person. This person is insulting me, hurting me. They get angry. And perhaps you can control it to the extent you're not going to shout at the person. Some people shout also, some even hit him. But you want to hit him, you won't shout, and then you have anger in yourself against him. But see, it's all, it's taken over. And although you know that the anger is only going to do harm. So he said, a time when the Yetzer Hara comes upon a person, he falls from his inner strength. Then all the good aspects of being calm, cool and collected against anger and recognizing, like David HaMelech said when Shimi cursed him, so he said, Hashem told him to curse. And the person puts it in his mind, he's on the high madrega, he'll say, Hashem told him to insult me. Why? It's good for me. Because in life, people praise me too much, which brings me to stupid self-conceit inside. So it's very good for a person sometimes to get a strong, they call it a strong mishabela. With plenty of insults. So you shouldn't think he's the world. But Chazal say that he who is insulted does not insult back. That's one level. Second level is that Shomim Chafatal, they hear themselves put to shame and they don't answer at all. They say nothing. Probably they don't insult back, they don't say anything. It's the second level. You might still feel the anger inside, but when a person receives it as Yisura and he's happy about it, he says, oh, this is a purification process. When I'm surrounded by people who praise, so even a person says, I don't like it, but it goes to his head, goes to his heart. I'm a great fellow, look what I've achieved. And therefore, as I'll say, if he's happy when he's insulted, and he does everything out of love of Hashem, he says, Hashem loves me, and therefore he wants me not to become someone who worships himself. He wants me to be close to him, to be close to Hashem. You have to recognize everything comes from Hashem, and he's good to each one of us. And often he sends us some atmosphere purification which comes having to face insults. This is an example. Right, you've got any questions before we continue?
When you say a man can't go and say, I did this so that he can't get punished.
And what?
You can't, a man goes to a person and says, I stole something.
Yeah.
So are you saying they shouldn't believe him?
No. Can you tell him what's the law? The person goes into court, you mean?
Yeah.
He says, there's someone suspected of stealing diamonds, yeah, from the store. So he goes to the Beth Din and says, I stole those diamonds worth $1 million.
Yeah.
So what's the law?
It has to pay what is stolen and then it's free.
Yeah.
They believe him.
Huh?
They believe him.
Yeah. Well, they believe him.
Well,
so why does the sage just say a person not believes about himself? A person can't give evidence about himself. So if he pleads guilty, you can't accept it. There are no witnesses. Just pleads guilty to the crime. You don't accept it. So why is it if he comes and says, I stole the diamonds worth $1 million?
Because someone gave you $1 million away. His punishment is given back $1 million.
Yes.
Back. Well, who's going to give that if...
not good enough.
If it's not stolen. Right? If it's not stolen, it is...
Maybe it's fixed though. Maybe he's making tshuva. He's making tshuva.
No, if it's not stolen, it's like saying, I'm going to give $1 million present to Chaim. Yeah? Well, nobody's going to do that. You might as well have done that in the first place. Instead of saying, Tony, I stole... $1 million, but
maybe he's fixed
on it.
Maybe he's particularly.
No, I was talking about.
Maybe he stole
it. On the other hand, he might have stole it and he came to make tshuva. I stole it. I'm making tshuva.
So,
maybe
he's
a particular
friend.
Maybe his friend stole it.
So in the Torah tradition, there are a few principles here. One principle is if a person declares, he comes to a court and makes declaration. That I, Mr. So-and-so, I owe Mr. Reuven $1 million. Make the declaration. So the best is okay, if you make the declaration, you're going to give them to him. Without any crime, you've got to give them to him. So also, if he says, I stole $1 million worth of diamonds, the best will say, in that case, you made declaration from the best. You're obligated to pay the $1 million because however they came to you, you say you took them, you've got to give back.
Yes.
But you don't have to pay the double payment, the punishment, which is given to a thief who's caught red-handed. And also, he's not obligated to go to prison. You don't have to put in prison. You don't have to. However, the person do have the right. If this person comes, the person who's, let's say, he's got a nature to steal, he's a kleptomaniac, and that's why he comes to declare it as well. So certainly needs treatment, and you can't, they've got to fulfill the minimum penalties of the Torah, in which case it's got to pay the $1 million, not more, minimum. But they've also got another duty. They do have the duty to protect society. And therefore, they have to either send this person to a psychiatrist to make sure that he gets his lifestyle sorted out correctly and stops stealing. And if they have to use prison to stop them stealing, they have to do that, because they've got to protect society. That's a side matter. That's not a question put before the penitents of the Torah. But let me come for this to something of a more different nature. If a person comes to the court and he says, I have I've transgressed on certain other sins and crimes, the judge, because he wants to, why does he come to declare it? So we take into consideration what you mentioned. If he comes to declare, wants to do teshuvah, then the person has the duty to give him some form of punishment for teshuvah. For example, the time when there was the Sanhedrin, but had the ability to apply the death sentence and also to apply the punishment of lashes. So if a person comes along and said, I committed such and such sins which I'm liable for, I pray for, or I did many surahs which there's the punishment of lashes. It becomes the best to declare it. So he's not believed on himself. In mitzvah Torah, but we say a person, but if he comes to plead, he wants to gain an atonement, then you give him, you can give it to him, or give him some form of procedure of atonement, procedure of teshuva. And in practice that applies today as well. A person comes to the Beis Din and say, look, I did these wrongs intentionally, and I want to change. So the Beis Din will apply some form of atonement, depending on what the sin was. The sin that they're even actual question. Let's say a person has killed someone else by mistake. Now the din is that, let's use a Kohen. A Kohen who has been guilty of manslaughter, not only of murder, should not really give the blessing of the priest. And what happens if he afraid he committed this? In fact, there's a question I saw in Teshuvot recently that there was a Kohen who was in, unfortunately, the concentration camps where he was a couple. And what he did, they used to use Jews to throw their fellow Jews into the crematorium, into the gas chambers. So he kept asking a question, what should he do? First of all, he wants to have an atonement for that. It was done by force. I mean, it would kill him otherwise if he didn't do it. So it was a case, not an easy case. The Nazi said, if you don't do this, we're going to kill you right away. So go ahead. So he got it on his conscience. So they work out a way of atonement for him. Then they even say, doesn't it, way of atonement? And afterwards, he can also bless the people if it was a coin. Many questions of that nature. So a person who comes to make a confession in court that he's been guilty of various crimes, if he comes Bederech Teshuvah, then the Bat Midin, even until today, have to go into the question and give each person some form of procedure of penitence. But as objective evidence, this is an objective evidence. I suppose largely because a person, when he records what happened to himself, it's always with a little bit of bias in different directions. It can be a direction for his own good, it can be a direction for his own evil. Because sometimes there is a yetzahara in a person, evil inclination, to destroy his self-esteem. They think that some people live in that fashion as well. They live with a constant inferiority complex. And they allow the inferiority complex to decrease their potential to do good. They say, I'm no good at this, no good at that, and I'm not worthy of this, not worthy of that. And as a result, they are guilty of living a life of always degrading themselves and think they're not good, when really Hashem has given them fantastic potential to do good. They're not following it. Any other questions?
There was a case where there was a celebrity who didn't want to take blame because he's a celebrity. He's got much more to lose than someone else that's not a celebrity. So then they made a plan that the non-celebrity will take the blame. So in that case, he comes to you and he says, I did it. Why do you have to believe him? Maybe he's covering up for someone else.
Okay. Yes?
What does Halakha say?
Huh?
What does Halakha say to that?
What is?
What does... Has Judaism got an answer to that?
We'll give an example. A concrete example.
Okay. So a man, a celebrity, shot, had a gun in his pocket, went off on its own, and nearly shot someone.
Killed someone?
No. Nearly.
Nearly?
Nearly. Hit no one. No one got injured, nothing. But still a crime.
What was the crime?
The crime that goes off in a public area.
What? The gun went off?
The gun went off in a restaurant. Yeah. Could have killed someone. So the crime is it went off in a public area. That's a crime.
By mistake.
By mistake.
Yeah.
So he, the person that owned the gun that went off in his pocket was a celebrity. He was sponsored by big companies, and if he owned up to that, they'll take away his sponsorship. So what did he do? He talked to his friend, and his friend, he paid his friend, listen, friend, I've got much more to lose than you, I'll give you some money, just take the blame, and then whatever they take from you, I'll give back to you, let's say, plus or double. What does Judaism say? So that means, when someone, that means, okay, that's the specific case. But going from specific to general, that means if I come to the court and say, I stole, I killed, I raped, or whatever, who said, why must you believe me? Maybe I'm covering up for someone else.
Well, first of all, a pretty complex situation you've described. But, let's hear your opinion. How would you decide in such a situation?
You don't believe anything. If I said I got the bus at 1 o'clock, you said, no, I don't believe it. Well, that's what you're saying.
No, I'm not. Can you see the difference? Can you see what you're saying and what I'm saying? Can you see the difference?
No, I don't believe
it. What if a rich person paid him to say that he got the bus at 1 o'clock?
Sorry?
Yeah. A rich guy paid
you. You know such an instance?
It happens.
Yeah?
There was a case in England a year ago or 2 years ago, a long time ago, it's just come now, it's finished, that an MP persuaded his wife to take, he was illegally driving,
yeah,
and that his wife should take the blame for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And well, she did. And people said, we know we saw him driving, not the wife. And it's been going on for a long time.
I mean, it's not so surprising. It happens all the time. It's not one in a million. It happens all the time. Let's say I've got lots of cases against me. One more case and I go to jail. I tell my friend, you take the blame because I'll go to jail. I'll give you the money. You take the blame, you won't go to jail.
No, that's shohad.
You won't go to jail, I'll go to jail.
He's taking the shohad. He says, I'll give you money. You take the blame. That's shohad. That's shohad.
No, but that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is the man that goes there, according to Judaism, if he's blaming himself, he must believe him.
No, we don't. You're not allowed to
testify. If he's blaming himself for murder,
on the contrary,
then you don't believe him.
On the contrary, you don't even believe a person who comes to a court and says, I killed someone.
No, I'm not talking about killing.
But
killing, of course. Killing
any crime, normally speaking, Ein Adam made al atzmo. No person can give testimony about himself in front of the courts here below. Don't accept it. It's not accepted. That's the whole point. In Jewish law, there's much less reliance on a person's declaration of doing anything wrong than there is in any other system of law. You don't believe it.
So remember to kill all the witnesses.
Huh?
You don't believe him, but you don't punish him as if you
don't believe him, but nevertheless, by the fact you don't believe him, what I pointed out, that the best thing, have a duty to protect society. So if a person comes to the court and says, I raped her, this or the other thing, look, they have to take responsibility for him as a person who is a member of society and can damage society. Therefore, they must send him to a psychiatrist, first thing, and see if that will work. If that doesn't work, and he carries on with murderous or rapist intentions, he's got to be put into prison, because he's a danger to innocent human beings. That's it. There's the law of the halakha, and there's the law of protection. It's called Dine HaMelech. The whole concept, if you do the Sanhedrin, Dine HaMelech, the king here can be replaced by the government. The government means the people responsible for the good order within society, apart from the denim of egos, which are connected with bringing specific forms of penalties, which are intended atonements for crimes, there's the concept of having to protect society. That is really the sanction which exists today. For example, in principles, everybody knows this, that the Torah is very much against all forms of capital punishment. However, the king, in the law of the Torah already, has permission if it's dangerous to do it. Now, the question arises, does this law of capital punishment also apply to the suicide bombers? It's a question raised today, because maybe it doesn't. Why? Because as far as capital punishment for killing people and so on and so forth, that has been abolished, more or less. There's no Sanhedrin. There's a Sanhedrin, a great big problem. There's no Sanhedrin. And even when there was a Sanhedrin, it was, generally speaking, did not take place. But if we have a situation, as we have today, that we know there's people who are trained to kill themselves at the same time killing hundreds of others, that's the kind of suicide problem, and they think that's the ideal, and they're in prison. And what happens if they're in prison? In prison, they are a potential of explosion. Why? Because the fact they're in prison, they become, as it were, a means of bargaining. See, what I'm saying, you know, if you want to make peace with us, you've got to release all those prisoners. And we know those prisoners are not ordinary murderers. We're talking about people who are committed to go on murdering others who are innocent by taking explosives on their body in different ways, and taking human clothing. So, and they'll go and kill innocent people, and they want to continue doing it. And they say openly they're continuing doing it, and you're letting them go free. Hundreds of them. And then you do it. So this is a big problem. These so-called extremist political prisoners, who are not just political, but they've been trained from childhood upwards to think it's the greatest heroism to go give over your life. You know how it works. They take the teenagers and they give them the Koran paradise, and the Koran paradise are put strongly to the imagination, where each of them are given 70 most beautiful virgins that exist in the world. That's in their mind. That's what happened to them the moment they commit this great mitzvah, chas v'shalom, what they call it, of killing as many non-believers as possible, amongst them all as some believers. That's what they think. That's in their mind. And you know that to some extent they're addicted to this, and you leave them in a prison. It's a time bomb to leave them in prison. They'll be used. Yeah, they'll say, oh, you want to, they'll capture one Jewish soldier, and they'll say, we'll only free the Jewish soldier, we're going to kill him, unless you give it, those 100 terrorists have to be freed. So today, this is a question of the protection of society, of human society. But these people, if they're Al-Qaeda extremists, I mean, they're all over the world. And they'll do anything against Americans, against the Western world. It's an enormous danger. So the question is, it's quite not so simple. But the Torah said these are the people, better to kill them. They're too dangerous. That's one of the extreme aspects of protection of society, which a Bedouin would have taken into consideration, the Torah Bedouin. But it applies also to your sort of situations. If you've got the person who's a semi-meshugana, and he comes and says certain things, and you find out there's plenty of circumstantial evidence also that he's done it, you don't have actually two witnesses that gave him the warning according to categories of cross-questioning witnesses, that we don't have. But for circumstantial evidence, this Meshuggah indeed has done evil things. So you've got to take into consideration your conscience to glory. So you've got to, generally speaking, such people have to be treated in prison.
In the way of England, it's the same. If a person was a murderer, and he can't plead guilty in court, he has to be given a defence. They'll even appoint a defence for him. He says, even if he said, I did it, they appoint a defence for him because he can't just,
Because in the U.S., you know, they do it in the U.S., I think it used to be, at least in New York State,
you have a lawyer.
That if you choose to plead guilty, they cannot give you the death penalty. But if you plead innocent and you're proven guilty, then you're eligible for the death penalty in a capital case. But only if you try to defend yourself and just plead guilty, they won't execute you.
Yeah, some of that is based upon the Jewish law. Especially Americans are very attached to biblical and even rabbinic precedents. We're all due to go to a divine court of law in a short time.